Going a little early on the show there, stopping the music just a tad early. What the heck, why not? Happy Wednesday, everyone. I am Hank Jones. You are listening to Hank Jones Poly Sports on Global Patriot Radio Network, part of Blog Talk Radio. Every Wednesday, whether you want me on or not, I am here. And, of course, every day someone is here for Global Patriot Radio. Mondays, Vito and Big Al with the Vito Esposito Show, Mamma Mia No Sharia. Tuesdays, Eric with Radio Free Kafiristan. Wednesday, me, Hank Jones. Thursdays, Paul Sutliff with the Sutliffian Report. Every Friday, you get Andrew Herod with Conservative Casual Friday, a.k.a. Islam in Focus. That's a different one. That's earlier in the day. That's like 1 p.m. Saturday nights, later, that's 10 p.m. till midnight Eastern Time, Minister Usama Dakduk and the Beautiful Christie with Revealing the Truth About Islam. And also Paul, I believe, gets involved there as well. I don't know if he gets on air, but he certainly takes part in terms of helping production. And then Sundays, Eric is back with Real Interfaith Dialogue. And again, you need to download an app, come in before the show to look how to and see how to do that, because you can't just jump on in that particular show. But that's us, 7 days, 7 shows, 8 different hosts, all bringing you relevant, irrelevant, and just fun topics. As I said, it's Wednesday, so you have me, Hank Jones, with Hank Jones Poly Sports. We talk politics, we talk sports. We even, of course, get involved when it gets ugly and the two meet together, politics and sports. Well, a lot of celebrity, I guess you want to call it, well-known people passed away in the past week. Last Friday, Leon Spinks, he was 67. He battled prostate cancer for several years. He won Olympic gold for the United States. He was a light heavyweight in 1976 in Montreal. His brother Michael, I believe, was the middleweight champion in those Olympics. In February 1978, in his eighth pro fight, he won a split decision over Muhammad Ali. Split decision, not unanimous, but it was split. But most people thought he won. He was stripped of the WBC version of the belt when he took the rematch with Ali. The WBC took it and then ended up giving it to Ken Norton, who then lost it in a fight with Larry Holmes. Ali got the WBA belt back, retired for a bit. Tried coming back a couple times. It wasn't pretty, but he did. What the heck? After that, Leon moved down in weight. First, he lost a fight to Larry Holmes in 1981 when Holmes still had the WBC title. He eventually forfeited that and took the IBF title. He moved down to cruiserweight. He had fought there on and off. He moved down to cruiserweight, lost a fight to Dwight Muhammad Kawi. He lost to Holmes in 3 TKO and then a 6th-round TKO to Dwight Muhammad Kawi for the WBA's version of the cruiserweight title. When Michael, his brother, upset Larry Holmes for the IBF title, they became the first brothers to hold a heavyweight title. And, of course, the Klitschkos came along later on. His son Corey was a unanimous welterweight champion in all the belts. 2-time IBF junior middleweight champ. They are believed to be the only father-son duo to hold the world boxing titles. He became the second person after Primo Carnera to hold a boxing title and a wrestling title. I know. He won the Frontier Martial Arts Wrestling Brass Knuckles title in 1992. He's a colorful guy, sometimes a troubled life, but he was a genuine nice guy from all accounts and from all interviews and stuff like that. And then former Secretary of State under President Reagan, George P. Shultz, passed away last Saturday. He was 100. He also served under Nixon as Secretary of Labor at one point, Secretary of the Treasury, Director of Office of Management and Budget. He later served as an advisor to the presidential campaign of George W. Bush in 2000. Now, former Indiana First Lady Susan Bye, she was the wife of former Governor Evan Bye. She passed away last Friday also. She was 61. She had battled brain cancer for several years. They were noteworthy for being the first family in the state of Indiana to have children while in office since the 1830s. Their twin sons both got undergrad degrees at Harvard. One entered the Army and one the Marines, and one is now pursuing a law degree, and the other an MBA, both from Harvard. Mrs. Bai, she was an attorney. She was a former beauty pageant contestant. She worked for Eli Lilly at the same time as being a distinguished visiting professor at Butler University. And even Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb expressed he and his wife's sadness, although they were from different parties, called her a radiant public servant, wife, mother, and friend, leaving a remarkable impact on the Indiana, state of Indiana and the U.S., and asked all Hoosiers to pray and be there for the Bai family. Patricia Healy. Now, that might not be a big name, but she was the wife of singer Engelbert Humperdinck. Passed away last Friday, 2 days after revealing that both of them had been diagnosed with COVID in January. They were married in 1964, and in 2017, Engelbert Humperdinck reported that his wife had been suffering from Alzheimer's disease for the previous 10 years. She was 85, so I don't want to say, you know, like George P. Schultz, you know, it's not one of those gone too soon type things, but still, it's sad for Mr. Humperdinck. I mean, the love of his life since 1964. So before I get into the next one, let's lighten it up again a little bit. I've got Mrs. Hank over in Hank Haven, the adjunct room to Electric Hankland Studios. Got several people on the phone lines listening in. I recognize all those numbers, actually. Brother Tommy, T. Bodie, Big Sis, and Hawkeye Mike are all listening. Indie Hawk KB is in the chat room. He's usually got good stuff to say, so if y'all want to get in, it's the time to do it. Former Tennessee Titans defensive lineman Josh Evans also passed away last Friday. He was 48 from kidney cancer. He started for the Titans in their Super Bowl 34 appearance. If you remember, they came up like a yard short against the Rams. Kevin Dyson caught that pass. It was sort of like it wasn't a jailbreak pass, but it was a cut back into the middle pattern and yard short. He had 13 hours of surgery in last January, a year ago in 2020. They found tumors in his kidneys, intestines, gallbladder, and pancreas. Last summer, he had asked fans for prayers. NFL fans, he went to an Atlanta cancer treatment facility when they discovered that it had spread to his spine and liver. Just 48 years old, man, that is sad. Texas Republican Congressman Ron Wright passed away Sunday. He was 67. Now, they attributed it to COVID-19. They did that, you know, COVID-19 complications. What they said later in the article, like way later, is that he had been diagnosed with lung cancer in 2018. And T. Bodie made it to the chat room as well. All right. Anyway, Mr. Wright had lung cancer. I'd say that's a complication from lung cancer, not from COVID. But he's the first sitting member of Congress to pass away from the disease. Although Congressman-elect from Louisiana Luke Letlow had passed away in December, but that was before he was actually sworn in for his first term. Mr. Wright's wife, Susan, is also battling the virus. It's expected Texas Governor Greg Abbott will call a special election to fill his seat. Some are thinking that Mrs. Wright, should she recover, may opt to run for the seat. Regardless, no matter how the Republican side shakes out, you know, a fair number of Democrats are going to come in. Christopher Plummer, Oscar-winning actor, probably best known as Captain Von Trapp, obviously in 1965, Sound of Music. He passed away last Friday at 91. He was the oldest actor to win an Oscar. He won Best Supporting for 2011's The Beginners. He was 82. Ironically, he thought The Sound of Music was a bit syrupy, but he did praise his co-stars and the director, Robert Wise, and said Robert Wise did a great job of holding that thing together. Personally, my favorite role of his, probably as W.F. Robinson in 1980 film Somewhere in Time with Christopher Reeves and James Seymour. I know it's almost as syrupy as The Sound of Music, but I love that flick anyway. It's a great flick. Monday we lost former Supremes member Mary Wilson. She was a founding member. Passed away in Henderson, Nevada at 76. She was the only founding member who remained with the group until they disbanded in 1977. She and Flo Ballard were basically shoved to the back, probably, you know, in favor of Diana Ross. Probably not coincidental that Diana Ross was also allegedly having an affair with Berry Gordy of Motown founding fame at the time. Mary Wilson did have the co-lead on some later hits after Ross left. Floyd Joy, not my favorite, but it's okay. And Stoned Love. So, wow. Marty Schottenheimer passed away Monday. He was 77. He had Alzheimer's disease since 2014 and been placed in hospice last week. He had teams that won 10 or more games 11 times in his career, but his playoff record was just 5-13. He had two Browns teams make the AFC championship. They lost to the Broncos in successive years, one on the drive where Elway took them 90 yards in 14 seconds or whatever, and then got it to overtime. And then the fumble the next year when Ernest Biner, they were driving for a tying touchdown, and Ernest Biner fumbled, I think, on the 5-yard line. 2007 with the Chargers, they were AFC's number one seed with a 14-2 record. Then they lost a bunch of mistakes. And they basically imploded. They lost to Tom Brady and the Patriots. He never made a Super Bowl as either a coach or a player. He was backup quarterback on the 66 Buffalo Bills team that lost in the AFL championship, ironically enough, to the Kansas City Chiefs, who then played Green Bay in the inaugural Super Bowl. Yahoo football writer Terez Taylor passed away unexpectedly yesterday. He was just 37. No cause given, but he covered the Chiefs for the KC Star from 2006 to 2018, and then he left for Yahoo. He was also a Hall of Fame voter, had a vote in the Hall of Fame, pretty young. So, may all of them rest in peace. May their families be comforted. I mean, it's a tough time to lose a relative with everything that's going on anyway. Let's get to some politics news. The Democrat-led House voted to remove freshman Republican Congresswoman from Georgia, Marjorie Taylor Greene, from her committee assignments. In their haste to appease the Dems, 11 Republicans voted with the unanimous Dems to approve it. 11 GOP members who need to face strong primary opposition in 2022 are Young Kim of California, Mario Diaz-Balart of Carlos Jimenez, and Maria Elvira Salazar of Florida, Adam Kinzinger of Illinois, who also voted with impeachment, by the way, Fred Upton of Michigan, ditto, Chris Smith of New Jersey, Chris Jacobs, John Katko, and Nicole Malliotakis of New York, and Brian Fitzpatrick of Pennsylvania. House Majority Leader Steny Hoyer of Maryland, he pointed out that the GOP removed former House member Steve King of Iowa back in 2018. What he fails to point out is that, the Republicans did that. They didn't seek a House vote. It was a party move, not a House-wide censure. Anyway, Marjorie Taylor Greene came under fire for having beliefs that the Dems disagreed with. It's really nothing more than that. Hopefully she'll be smart enough to report to her Georgia constituency that the Democrats, including the ones from her state, have such little regard for her district that they wouldn't allow her to serve in any meaningful capacity. That's what she needs to do. She needs to get back every chance, every town hall. She needs to say, unfortunately, it's not so much me, it's you they don't care about. They can kick me, but they ultimately what they did was they said, you don't get representation. That's what she needs to do. When they elected Senators Ossoff and Warnock this past cycle, they elected people who don't mind shortchanging their state at the expense of ideology. Just keep saying it. Elsewhere, faux Republican Mittens Romney is putting forth an amendment to the Biden COVID relief plan. He's proposing to change the child tax credit from a flat $2,000 per year to a plan of $350 per month for kids up to six, and $250 per month for kids 6 to 17. The cap would be $1,250 per month per family. In addition, rather than a tax credit on your taxes, families would be sent checks in those amounts each month. I got to give Mittens kudos for the fact that it would be paid for with cuts, at least. One to the earned income tax credit and the other to cash welfare, known as TAMF, Temporary Assistance for Needy Families. There would also be a tightening of Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, a.k.a. SNAP, as well as eliminate head of household filing status. Look, while it's not perfect nor particularly creative, what Mittens is doing, and he learned it from being a blue state governor, he's adapting the power of the payment strategy. It's not particularly creative, nor is it necessarily fiscally smart, as such programs are ripe for fraud. But to his credit, at least he's taking a long view versus just a snap response to COVID-19. I don't know if it'll gain any traction, but at least, look, he's buying. He is buying. I mean, remember, in It's a Wonderful Life, Potter's not selling, he's buying. Mittens is buying. He's buying. I mean, it's a vote-buying tactic. But by the same token, what he's doing is he's taking a longer view that, look, SNAP checks, you know, SNAP judgments of sending out checks for $1,000, $1,200, $600, $1,400, that doesn't solve it. We all know that. I mean, any of us that are listening, any of you I'm talking to, a $1,200 check isn't going to go that far in this day and age. That's not the solution. That's very short term, very temporary. What he's saying is for people having kids, and it is a challenge, that there's some help out there. Doesn't say if there will be a means test. I mean, it's not a prebate. It doesn't say that. You know, like under the fare tax, they talk about you don't pay anything. No, you don't file taxes. You simply pay sales taxes everywhere you go. And then at the beginning of each month, under one plan, everybody gets a prebate of like $1,200 a month at the beginning of the month for expenses, for basic household expenses. It's not that necessarily. But it is. It sounds like it's a prebate type of thing, and it's vote buying, no doubt. But by the same token, at least he's thinking a little bit longer term. Hey, here's one we can expect to see repeated, at the very least, on a monthly basis under AP Biden. Last week, Border Patrol agents arrested 11 Iranians in Arizona who had entered the U.S. illegally. I'm not saying it's going to be Iranians, but it's going to be at the Mexico border. Evidently, agents saw the group near San Luis, Arizona, on a bridge, and then after determining they had entered the country illegally, they arrested them. The six females and five males were taken to Yuma Station for processing. Yuma sector agents, by the way, lead the nation in apprehending Iranian nationals in illegal border crossings. Don't say I never give you trivia. Yes, they do. In other words, our southern border is so poorly managed and guarded, we need to stop with anything, any building project, any barrier that makes our country safer. Yeah. And by the way, because of a, quote, similar skin tone, it's been talked about, so this is not Hank making up a racist. They've talked about the fact of similar skin tone. Because of that, Middle Easterners, including those who tried to come to the U.S. to commit acts of terror, have actually increased attempts to enter Mexico via Mexico since 9/11. True story. President Trump's defense team for the impeachment hoax made two specific moves last week. First, they planned on introducing a timeline along with specific events that showed the attack started before the president's speech. It'll include the items from the New York Times' homepage, as well as statements from some of those arrested who said parts of the attack were pre-planned, thus basically invalidating the Dems' contention that President Trump intentionally incited the attack. The other move, as was expected, was the refusal to Democrat demands that President Trump testify. A delusional House Democrat hoax impeachment managers actually contend that because President Trump sent an answer to the articles of impeachment, that binds him to testify in person. One of them actually said that. And with respect to the first item, one of the attorneys noted, this is where the Dems, I believe, are so triggered and so obsessed with President Trump that they're willing to ignore just basic evidence that's right in front of us. On the matter of him testifying, Maryland Democrat Representative Jamie Raskin sent a letter to the president outlining that he should testify because he denied factual allegations set before him in his response. President Trump's attorney David Shane noted that Raskin's letter is basically a publicity stunt. He responded, he said, in part, at least with the following, says there's no such thing as negative inference in this unconstitutional proceeding. Your letter only confirms what is known to everyone. You can't prove your allegations against the 45th president of the United States, who is now a private citizen. And along that line, Alan Dershowitz wrote a brilliant op-ed for The Hill. He noted the House sham impeachment is an attack on the free speech of Americans. I shall read a few excerpts of it for you because it's really good. It's a brilliant op-ed by Mr. Dershowitz. Look, I don't often agree with this guy on anything, you know, normally politically. He's much more liberal, but you know, he also knows how to make sense. And basically, my things got pulled up for whatever reason. He said that, you know, look, if they're going after private citizens, which President Trump is now, he's basically the message is sent that anyone can be gone after on any grounds. And you don't necessarily have to have an impeachable offense. It can just be anything. Here's what he says. It undermines his First Amendment-based argument. In his defense, it amounts to dangerous broadsides against freedom of speech. He made the case that it does not apply at all to impeachment proceedings anyway. Said the brief filed by the House managers contains a frontal attack on freedom of speech for all Americans. It states categorically that the First Amendment does not apply at all to impeachment proceedings, despite the express language of that amendment prohibiting Congress from making any law or presumably taking any other action that abridges the freedom of speech. This is what's brilliant. Is this categorical statement surely would have surprised the framers of the First Amendment, who believed in freedom of speech, but not so much in democracy. The framers of our constitutional system thought they were building a republic with limited suffrage and many checks on democracy. He added, arguing that freedom of speech is essential to keeping it a republic, but not necessarily a democracy. So no, the First Amendment does not exist only to, quote, protect our democratic system. It exists to protect our liberty, regardless of whatever system we choose. He says, freedom of speech must include those who would replace democracy with other systems of government. It must even include those who advocate severe restrictions on freedom of speech, as many young left-wing radicals do today. He said they, too, must be allowed to express their dangerous views. He says, but even if the First Amendment were applicable here, private citizens and government officials stand on very different footing when it comes to being held responsible for their statements. He cited several other cases. Yeah, one of them, he said, after the November election, the 45th president exercised his First Amendment right under the Constitution to express his belief that the election results were suspect. Since, with very few exceptions, under the convenient guise of COVID-19 pandemic safeguards, state election laws and procedures were changed by local politicians or judges without the necessary processes and approvals from state legislatures. Exactly. So, it's go on the Epoch Times. He didn't write it. The Epoch Times printed the story. It was in The Hill. But like I said, always go to the Epoch Times, Epoch Times. A Trump appointee is suing the Biden administration over a threat of termination. Basically, it boils down to this. The appointee was appointed for a 3-year term. He was appointed in August of 2020 and reappointed last month. His term lasts for 3 years. His name is Roger Severino with the Health and Human Services. Well, term is supposed to last for 3 years, but he received an email this week from Gautam Raghavan, deputy director of the White House Presidential Personnel Office, asking him to resign. If not, he was warned that he would be terminated. And as someone pointed out, President Biden has no authority to terminate Mr. Severino's appointment of the council under 5 U.S. Code Section 595. It's for the Administrative Conference of the United Health, Administrative Conference of the United States Health, Part of Health and Human Services Department. So basically, AP Biden is not stopping with executive orders. Speaking of Jeff Foxworthy, he didn't make up the meme, but it's a meme with Jeff Foxworthy's picture, and it says, if the number of executive orders you have written doubles your time in office, you might be a dictator. You know how you might be in that redneck? Well, yeah, you might be a dictator. Yep. Apparently, the Palm Beach city attorney says it is legal for President Trump to live at his Mar-a-Lago property. Mighty big of him. But Palm Beach City Attorney John Randolph, he actually stated in a document last week that President Trump could be considered as a bona fide employee of the resort and that zoning code permits him to live there. A U.S. Marshal was shot last week while trying to carry out an arrest. The suspect shot at the marshal, who then returned fire and killed the suspect. There is no word yet on when the rioting and looting are scheduled to start on that one. Wow, this one's good. This one's really good. South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem hit reporters in her state squarely, I mean squarely between the eyes, on the subject of what they report and how they report it. She mentioned an excellent news report on the effect of the Keystone XL closure and asked one of her aides to hand it out. And she's talking about how it cited specific businesses outside the oil industry that were directly affected by the closure. What she did next, though, was nothing short of brilliant. She noted that the article came from a Washington, D.C. news outlet. She further went on to say that if she had done something similar, affecting so many jobs and businesses, she expects it would have been covered thoroughly, and that if it had been done by President Trump, it wouldn't have been beyond thorough. But she said nobody in this state covered it, even though people in this state are affected. She went on to say that she expects local news outlets to report on such things, whether they agree with her or not. And she closed with the most brilliant statement to the media, maybe the best ever. And her closing statement said it all. In my years of public service, and especially this last year, I've realized that the media most often shows their bias by what they choose not to cover. And in this instance, this lack of coverage from South Dakota reporters and the media speaks volumes. Yeah, that's the definition of mic drop right there. Oil rises, are rising, predictably, of course. It isn't U.S. producers that are seeing the benefit. It's with the termination of the pipeline, along with the cessation of further leases on federal lands, OPEC and Russia are the beneficiaries. Who'd have guessed? Oh, to make matters worse, worldwide demand, particularly in China and India, is almost back to pre-COVID levels. But again, that's not helping U.S. producers, nor is it making U.S. consumers too happy. U.S. stockpiles have fallen below 500 million barrels. Production has already fallen from 13 million barrels a day to 10.5 million barrels. In other words, a worldwide demand that's going to surpass 100 million barrels a day later this year. But our government wants our country going back to a consumer instead of being a producer. I'll tell you what, start looking at who in this country benefits. My guess is it is a who's who of U.S. establishment politicians and political establishment families, if you get my meaning. Think places like Ukraine and Russia. And families that have involvement there. Wink, wink. Fox Business News, which is part of Fox News Network, they've canceled Lou Dobbs Tonight. That was a nightly show on the Fox Business News Network each weekday. The network is claiming it was a change that was already planned. Come on. We all know it. It's because Dobbs and two other Fox News hosts were named, along with Fox News, by the way, as defendants in a defamation suit brought by Smartmatic. Don't know who Smartmatic is? No, not Vegematic. It's one of the corrupt voting machine companies that took part in the rigging of the 2020 U.S. presidential election. That actually didn't didn't happen just in November. It started in the late winter of 2019, believe it or not, and the early spring of 2020, and continued after Election Day. Anyway, this is just one more reason, frankly, of many to stop watching Fox News. Look, I like Sean Hannity. I like Brian Kilmeade. Frankly, I like most of the hosts and personalities. I don't like Chris Wallace. But yeah, frankly, when Chris Wallace, he's the son of legendary closed-minded lefty Mike Wallace, when he becomes the moral arbiter of your network every Sunday, it's not a surprise that those in management are too weak to stand on principle that they're just going to cave. When they hired a former Hillary Clinton campaign honcho to oversee their election programming, shock of shocks, Fox did exactly what Voter News Service did in 2000, i.e. calling something. They called Arizona polls. They called Arizona while polls were actually still open. Now, I tell you, what that does, that puts in the minds of people who have not voted, as well as in the minds of poll and election officials, basically that further voting or counting or election security isn't paramount or at a minimum not necessary. In other words, they're lax. They don't make sure that everybody gets through a line. They don't count that closely. They don't look that closely. They don't safeguard because it's been called. It enables easier manipulation of already cast ballots as well. It's helping to ensure that no further ballots are cast. They did this, like I said, in 2000. Voter News Service allowed networks, basically the networks, remember, they called Florida for Al Gore. Polls were still open. Some voters were told that polls were closing now because the race was called. But they were actually open for another hour in the panhandle because the panhandle's on Central Time. The rest of Florida's on Eastern Time. And networks were asked about it. They said poll workers innocently say there was no reason to keep voting open. No need to keep allowing people to cast votes. What happened? The networks were called out by FEC officials and by Congress. And what the networks did was they said, we got this information from Voter News Services. It's a consortium of vote tabulation. What they didn't say in Congress was that Voter News Service was a consortium owned by the networks. In other words, when people like Tom Brokaw, We Got Pennsylvania, were saying, well, we were given this information, you were given that information by people in your own company. Yeah, look, the fraud in this election cycle was done in other ways as well. In addition to faulty voting machines, allowing mail-in voting without request, same-day or provisional registration. They also created, in some states, drop-off ballot boxes, which were collected by individuals and groups not actually employed by elections offices. They also mailed ballots unsolicited to individuals who were not even eligible to vote. And then as we saw during the recounts and the lawsuits, they kept a series of constantly moving goalposts. Suits were thrown out because they weren't timely, or because they didn't have proper standing, or they were too late, or they didn't apply, or they wouldn't have changed the outcome. In other words, in addition to statistical impossibilities, or at best improbabilities, we also had as many lawsuits thrown out on bases that became impossible to even know what laws applied, which laws did not apply, and where suits should have been filed, not to mention burden of proof and all that stuff that was necessary for cases to proceed. Recounts, in fact, were done almost as a comedy routine because they used the exact same machines and processes as the original vote counts. They didn't do, like George, when they said, oh, we did a recount. They didn't do a hand recount. They literally used the same apparatus to do the recount. Ironically enough, folks, there are actually still three cases to be addressed by the Supreme Court at their conference on February 19th. Do they proceed? I don't know. Lynn Wood's case, Sidney Powell's case, and there's another one. I don't remember if it was Georgia or Pennsylvania. Oh, by the way, with regard to the lawsuit, Fox News said it was, quote, this is the lawsuit with Lou Dobbs. Fox News said it was, quote, proud of our 2020 election coverage and will vigorously defend this meritless lawsuit in court. Do not be surprised. I repeat, do not be surprised if Fox News is dropped as a party to the suit, but they still go after the three individuals. Do not be surprised. Oh, just to prove how vigilant Twitter is in its pursuit of decency, in its standards, Yeah, that platform refused to remove a sexual exploitation video of a minor. Yeah, even after he proved he was 13 years old, when he was targeted by traffickers on Snapchat, someone posing as a 16-year-old girl, they used various coercive methods to get him to produce nude photos for them. They used them as blackmail, threats to reveal photos to his parents, to his family, his friends, school leaders, even his pastor. He somehow broke free, and then when he was 16, the photos and the videos appeared on Twitter. Now, his mom finally got involved. They contacted Twitter in an effort to get the material removed. His mother even submitted copies of materials proving his age. Several days after their last attempt, this is what Twitter responded with. "We don't find this to be a violation of our policies, and we're going to take no further action." Yep. The material was removed after the Department of Homeland Security got involved. The young man and his family have brought a suit against Twitter. I'm going to go straight up here, folks. If you've ever seen a picture or video of Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey, this can't be a shock to you. I mean, one look at this guy basically says, I can see him. I can see him allowing that stuff. Absolutely. Yeah. He's a creep. He's one of those when you look at him. You just know it. I know it's prejudice for me to say that. He's a creep. He looks like a creep. Looks like a creep. Acts like a creep. It must be a creep. Of course. In Iowa, in D.C., Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley. He was first elected, by the way, the year I started at the University of Iowa, the fall of 1980, I believe. He sent a letter to Biden White House counsel Dana Remus regarding the formation of a, quote, bipartisan commission to study the federal court system and the Supreme Court and develop recommendations for reform. His concerns stem from the fact that an article on Politico, which cited an unnamed source, stated that the commission would be formed under the White House counsel's office, which would potentially shield it from transparency laws and public accountability. I'm going to guess that that response letter will be a what's what of lies told by a presidential administration. Anyway, Senator Grassley requested a reply from Dana Remus or the White House by February 15th, including a commitment to make all records from the commission publicly available without redactions. At this point, I'm going to insert a humorous, sarcastic emoji to say, good luck, Chuck. Does he not remember that AP Biden served under a president whose own birth certificate had more frigging redactions than the 9/11 commission's final report? Yeah, without redactions. Oh my God. Redaction is the mascot of this administration. Not yet, but it's going to be. Just in case anyone wants to dispute the fact, by the way, that this country is hurtling toward hell in an actual handbasket, I give you this little tidbit. Former Trump attorney and later turncoat Michael Cohen, who later became a prison inmate and is now out early because of COVID. Anyway, he's doing a podcast from his Manhattan apartment. No, folks, that's not the proof. I mean, that's all par for a post-Obama America, but at this point, we're still just going to hell when I give you that. What thoroughly and completely stuffs us into the handbasket, you ask? His recent interview with, wait for it, Stormy Daniels. Yes, Stormy Daniels. Podcast is called Mea Culpa. Evidently, that's Cohen's way of a mass apology. He begins the interview with stripper porn star Daniels by apologizing to her and then thanking her for giving him a second chance with the interview. Daniels, for her part, I guess, she admits she's a washed up never was and is really pursuing her original lawsuit all the way to the Supreme Court simply because she was ordered to pay $300,000 for legal fees when the lawsuit got tossed. She admitted that. I didn't listen to this thing. I just read some transcripts. I'm not going to listen to a Michael Cohen podcast, trust me. Anyway, yeah, for those that remember John Gotti, I was never a big fan of his main lawyer, Bruce Cutler. I had grudging respect for Cutler's replacement, Albert Krieger. But Michael Cohen? And there are ambulance chasers I respect more than that guy. Seriously. And as I said, between him and Stormy Daniels, the path to hell, as well as the vehicle in which that path has traveled, it's become a bit more clear, no doubt. Yeah, we are hurtling straight to hell in a hand basket. Okay, finally, because I've had enough politics for today, what I'm about to tell you, this story literally makes me want to just blow soup. Here's this from the not even close to great state of Oregon. This comes from Chris Field at The Blaze. Oregon teachers, via their teachers' unions, insisted that they couldn't return to classes unless and until they were safe. Union leadership suggested to the governor that they get put to the front of the line for the COVID vaccine. They were put to the front of the line, even ahead of the elderly, who comprise 80% of Oregon's COVID deaths. These scumbags, backed by their union, still refuse to report for in-class instruction. Not shockingly, everyone in the state is pissed, including editorial boards of the state's newspapers. The Blaze actually said the state's liberal newspapers in describing the editorial boards. I figured that was already understood, so I didn't add it. It's Oregon. Anyway, Portland Teachers Association President Elizabeth Thiel actually tried to play for sympathy. She said it's a terrible thing because the teachers got something the community so desperately needs, and now they feel caught in the middle. The Oregonian, i.e. the left, in big left when it comes to Oregon newspapers, is placing the blame more with Governor Kate Brown than it is on the teachers' unions. So, yeah, I guess it's not really. Paper actually said citizens and parents need to hold Brown's feet to the fire and that Brown needs to own up to giving away the vaccine ahead of the most vulnerable and honor her commitment to reopening schools. Tell you what, I bet I can make any Antifa or BLM thug, I bet I can make them frightened out of their skulls. You want to know how? I'll tell you how. You fire all the teachers and replace them with substitutes. I guarantee you there is nothing scarier than a teachers union or its members when they feel they are being forced to actually work or work as teachers in a school. Seriously, there's nothing scarier than a self-absorbed, self-inflated, self-important public school teacher with a sense of entitlement. I mean, you think Antifa and BLM tore up Portland? I'm telling you ain't seen nothing until you've seen that city in the hands of a teachers union. Seriously, that gang would scare the crap out of the entirety of New York City's entire construction industry unions. I'm telling you. A teachers union? Oh, God, that would be, oh. But yeah, it would make what's happened up till this point, it would make it look tame. Over in sports, Indy Hawk KB just gave me the word. Iowa football tackle Mark Kallenberger has announced he is going pro today. I am not sure who gave him that advice, because I don't think Mark Kallenberger is ready for the NFL yet. But maybe what he really knows is that he's not ready to keep a starting spot on the line next year. Could be nothing more than that. Well, good luck, Mark Kallenberger, but kind of, you know, takes another person off the O-line. Another blue blood has dropped out of the NCAA basketball top 25. Yep, now Kansas. It's first time since February of 2009 that they have not appeared in the poll. Meanwhile, Drake suffered its first loss of the season, so they too are out. The poll, pretty much, with a few exceptions, Gonzaga and Baylor at the top, a little bit of shuffling in the top five, but not much. Got Gonzaga and Baylor. Michigan is third. Ohio State is now fourth. Villanova fifth. Illinois sixth. Texas Tech seven. Houston eight. Virginia nine. Missouri 10. For those that wonder, the Iowa Hawkeyes, now losers of four of their last five games, have dropped to 15. Other Big Ten teams, Wisconsin at 21, Purdue at 24, and Rutgers at 25. Rutgers visits Iowa City tonight. And again, according to Indy Hawk KB, who is my secondary source of news tonight. C.J. Frederick is back for the Hawkeyes. That's huge. That is huge. So that's what's going on in college basketball that I care to talk about. I'm afraid to watch an Iowa game now. It's sort of like when you're afraid to look under your bed when you're a kid. I'm afraid to turn on the television when Iowa's playing. So let's talk Super Bowl. Yes, the halftime show sucked, again. As one friend of mine from youth put it on Facebook, said, The Weeknd doing a medley of his hit. That's perfect. But that game, wow. That game, I didn't see the Bucks keeping it close. Our little chat group talked about it. I didn't see him keeping it close. I definitely didn't see him winning, and I sure as hell did not see them winning by 22 points and holding Kansas City's offense without a touchdown. Here's what they did, though. Okay, Kansas City did have two tackles out, and that helped in what they in what the Bucks did defensively. They disguised a lot of their pressure strategy. They brought their linebackers up. They walked safeties up with no intention of sending them as pressure. Most of their linebacker pressure was brought from guys who were 2 yards off the line from a stance. They were not down on a hand. A couple times they did do that. But, again, thanks for Indy Hawk bringing another tidbit. Highest graded O-lineman in the Super Bowl since 2006, Tristan Wirfs of the Tampa Bay Bucks from the University of Iowa, graded out at 91.7. That is and if you saw the right side of the Bucks line, the gains they were tearing up on the right side of the line, that's Tristan Wirfs at right tackle. Anyway, like I said, they disguised their pressure, a lot of it. They did a fantastic job of keeping Kansas City's track team, otherwise known as wide receivers. They kept them in front of them most of the game. I think there was one play where a Kansas City receiver got behind a Tampa defensive back, and that was really only because the defensive back at that point was thinking run support. Quarterback Patrick Mahomes had avoided a sack. He was still running for his life. And to the point that an accurate throw wasn't going to happen anyway. But that's the only time I saw and I can remember seeing a Chiefs wide receiver getting behind a Bucs defensive back. The Chiefs D pulled off a goal line stand, believe it or not, and then they gave the ball back, and then promptly a comedy of errors, run of penalties that basically handed the Bucs another TV TD that the Chiefs couldn't afford to give up at that point. That sort of broke their backs before halftime. In golf, on the PGA Tour, Brooks Koepka started the fourth round of last weekend's Waste Management Phoenix Open. He was 5 strokes behind Jordan Spieth and Xander Schauffele, but he rallied, especially on the back nine. He scored 2 eagles in the round on his way to a 665 to win it. He holed out an eagle chip from 32 yards on the 17th hole, which broke a tie. In the whole round, he bogeyed the second hole. He eagled the par 5 third, then he birdied 13, 14, and 15. On 17, he hit a fairway wood 305 yards off the 17th tee just to the front and the left, and then just a short 32-yard chip for eagle. From there, he holed out the eagle chip, and then he finished at 19 under 265. By the way, there were 5,000 fans in attendance, which is the largest so far this season on the tour, so that's good. Starting to see more of that. NCAA football, former USC assistant Todd McNair is getting a new trial in his defamation case against the NCAA. This goes back to the Reggie Bush era investigation, where basically NCAA said he lied and was aware of payments. He sued the NCAA in a defamation suit. He lost. A lower court in California ordered a new trial. And then a California appeals court last Friday affirmed that lower court's decision. NCAA said he violated ethical conduct rules during its investigation into whether Reggie Bush received improper benefits. Duh. Anyway, the 3-judge panel denied the NCAA's appeal. Said they hold that the trial court did not abuse its discretion in finding insufficient evidence to justify the verdict on falsity, the appeals court ruling said. Accordingly, we affirm the new trial order and do not address the NCAA's challenge to the declaratory judgment. He's in his second season as the Tampa Bay Bucks running backs coach, so What the heck? Why does he care? Oddly enough, the judge had ordered a new trial, cited insufficient evidence to justify the original verdict, and he implied bias from a juror. He ruled that the jury foreperson, who is an attorney, should not have been able to participate due to implied bias. The juror's law firm was part of the NCAA's legal team on the McNair case. This juror did not work on the case. He didn't work in the same office as the firm's lawyers that did work on it, and he did profess impartiality, but that didn't matter to the judge. The judge said permitting juror number two to remain on the jury and participate in deliberations and the verdict resulted a miscarriage of justice and in plaintiff being deprived of a fair trial. Says without juror number two, it is likely a different outcome would have resulted. We'll talk about that a little bit more later. That's definite politicization. Also in the NFL, Richard Sherman, 49ers quarterback, says he wants to play two more seasons before he retires. He becomes an unrestricted free agent in March. He says his next stop will be his last, most likely. He's 33. He said his original goal was to play until he's 35. So, barring injury, we've got two more seasons of Richard Sherman. Enjoy it while we can. Kansas City Chiefs outside linebacker coach Britt Reed. You'll remember he happens to be the son of head coach Andy Reid. He's been placed on administrative leave pending probe of last week's crash. Injured a couple kids, left a five-year-old girl in critical condition. He was involved in a three-car accident. One of the other drivers is being investigated for possible impairment, as is Britt Reed. He admitted to officers on the scene that he'd had two or three drinks and had also taken a prescription Adderall. One officer said in a report that Reed's eyes were bloodshot with, quote, moderate odor of alcohol. I assume that means his breath, not his eyes. He did not make the trip to Tampa. He did not coach. According to his dad, he underwent surgery this week, but it wasn't specific. Back in college football, or just in college in general, UCF has a new AD, Terry Mahajir. They were able to lure him from Arkansas State. Boy, but that was a tough sell. He's been Arkansas State's AD since 2012. He played there football there in the 90s. He's also on the college football playoff committee, which might just help the cause of a group of five schools. Have some, you know, having a guy from, you know, Arkansas State, having a guy from UCF that's had a couple runs at the possible of making the playoff, that's big. In the Big 12, Iowa State football has extended head coach Matt Campbell through 2028. So what, if he keeps up what he did last season, they could be getting a real steal there. They have a ton of last year's team back. It won't be a fun game when the Hawks have to travel there in September, but I'll tell you what, I think there's a lot more to their last season than just, you know, look, I'm not saying they didn't have a good year. They went 9-3. It's a good year. It's not, for them, it's a great year, but, you know, they're acting like, you know, they've arrived. Look, they got into the New Year Six. Frankly, Indiana and Northwestern had a better case for that. But so be it. But anyway, they've locked up Matt Campbell through 2028. So, in the Big Ten, Maryland linebacker Chance Campbell is transferring to Ole Miss as a grad transfer, so he's eligible immediately. I'm not sure why. I'm really not. Ole Miss was 117th out of 122 schools, I believe. Now, they were 117th in points per game last year with 38.3. Why would he leave the Big Ten for that? Also in the Big Ten, this is interesting. They just announced they're moving this year's basketball tournament from Indianapolis from Chicago. They're claiming better centralized testing protocols and efficiencies, as well as centralized accommodations. So with both the men and the women playing there, maybe that makes sense. I'm not sure. Then again, I mean, more people. My guess, though, is given the way they thanked Chicago Mayor Beetlejuice and the venues and the sports commissions, they either paid handsomely or were given some ultimatum that didn't sit well with the presidents and chancellors. But, Yeah, you know Chicago. I mean, being a graft town, something had to happen. Or maybe they think it's an advantage playing in Indianapolis before all the schools arrive later for the NCAA tournament. I don't know. I may have to talk to Vito and Al about getting me credentials for that. I'll stay at Indy Hawk KB's house, maybe do the show from there. Anything that gives me a chance to meet Jimmy Chitwood in Hoosiers, I'm there. I am there. Yeah, Indy Hawk, I may have to crash on your floor if I can talk Vito and Al into giving me credentials, either for the Big Ten tournament or the NCAA. Speaking of Jimmy Chitwood, the Hawkeyes could sure as hell use him right now. These last few games have been brutal. I don't mind telling you. I don't expect much better tonight against Rutgers. Yes, we have C.J. Frederick back. But, you know, I mean, look. Hawkeye fans understand this when I say this. Franuary is here. Franuary is here. The Fran fade, the Fran McCaffrey fade. He is the coach of the Hawkeyes. They fade every year. They back their way into tournaments. They lose early in the Big Ten tournament, usually. And they just, it's happening again. It is happening again. I don't know. I just don't know. We'll see tonight. We'll see tonight. But I'm telling you, I think the Franuary fade is here. I'm going to take a quick break, leave you with some good music. Let's see. I was going to do Wayman Tisdale. Yeah, I'm going to go with Wayman Tisdale tonight. Get yourself, if you're drinking beer or wine, get yourself a refill. If you're drinking coffee, ditto. If you're drinking water, load up. That's what I'm going to do. If you got something on the grill that needs turning, do that. But anyway, for about 3 minutes and so seconds, we're going to be listening to some Wayman Tisdale while I take a quick break and get some water. are back. You are listening to Hank Jones Poly Sports on Global Patriot Radio, part of Blog Talk Radio Network, every Wednesday. If you're wanting to call in, dial 319-527-6706. You can listen that way. You don't have to talk if you don't want to. If you do want to talk, if you're listening or if you decide you want to talk, just hit the one on your phone. I get a little icon that says, hey, I want to talk. And simple as that. You can always listen. Like I said, just come into Blog Talk Radio, look up Global Patriot Radio Network. I also send out a link to the show that brings you directly to it. I'm not sure how well that works because I don't access it that way. But when you're in, you can sign up and get an account and get in the chat room. Or you can come in anonymously, but nobody will know who you are. And if you're witty or smart or funny or whatever, people won't know it. So you don't want to do that, I wouldn't think, anyway. Okay, let's go to Poly Sports. Oh, before we do, let me reiterate that song. That was a Wayman Tisdale song. Wayman Tisdale played basketball at Oklahoma. He left a year early, went pro. He was an absolute stud. He became a jazz bass player. He'd always played, but he did that as a new vocation, so to speak. He was afflicted with cancer, bone cancer in his leg. He had leg partially amputated and had a prosthetic made. Anyway, it spread. He thought it was in remission for a while, but then it spread. It recurred, and he passed away way too early, 45 years old, I believe, back in 2009. Anyway, that was his take on the Earth, Wind, and Fire classic, Can't Hide Love. He does it with, of course, a bass guitar as the vocalist. Good stuff. I like his stuff. If you ever get a chance, look him up. Wayman Tisdale, W-A-Y-M-A-N, and then Tisdale, just like it sounds. In Poly Sports News, just to show that the AP Biden administration isn't limiting itself to reversing executive orders, senior administration officials reached out to Major League Baseball to try and delay the season after the Johnson & Johnson vaccine becomes fully available. However, MLB Players Association, they nixed the idea of a delayed or shortened season. God, when an organized labor group isn't falling in step right behind a Democrat president, what's that tell you? Yeah. There's a bill in Congress to make it illegal for the NCAA to limit name, image, and likeness amounts for college athletes. As one could guess, the sponsors have made it a race issue. I'll give them this. They didn't say that white athletes can be limited. At least they didn't say that yet. One of the sponsors is Democrat Lori Trahan of Massachusetts. She's citing her experience as a volleyball player at Georgetown to describe the NCAA's unfair business model. Really? Last I checked, women's volleyball at Georgetown wasn't running your athletic department. That's not what was paying the freight. They say that it's a guise of hiding behind amateurism to justify obscene profitability while student athletes struggle to get by. Look, that's just flat-out dishonesty. Now, look, I'm not a huge fan of the NCAA. The NCAA actually has asked Congress to step in due to various and different state laws that say NCAA rules will be illegal or whatever. But this will hinder NCAA efforts to regulate any semblance of equality, equity, or fairness. What I'm saying is an absolute outright lie. The schools they're not for-profit enterprises. Yes, they make a ton of money, but it all goes back into the program or goes to the school. It doesn't just sit there. They don't sit there. There are no stockholders. No, it doesn't work that way. It's a not-for-profit by nature, by design, if you will. Public university. Now, not all of them. There are private universities, but NCAA schools, they're allowed to generate retained earnings and all that stuff, but they are not allowed to sit there and stockpile and keep earning dollar upon dollar. In fact, if you just one that I can tell you about, the University of Iowa is going to have to be getting a loan this year because of shortfalls in athletic budget funds. They're not getting the same amount of TV money. They're not getting any fan money. So, yeah, that, you know what's happening at other schools. Iowa State, I know, has had to lay off or give pay reductions to staff. Iowa has had several sports canceled. It's just absolutely insane how they try and use this. I actually feel for the NCAA to a point, in that some states aren't really doing this, or most states, they're not really doing this in the interest of the student athletes anyway. They're doing it to protect the schools and the alumni and the boosters who want far too much say in the matter. Look, it boils down to this. At pretty much any school, one or two sports pay the freight. In Iowa, football pays the freight. Men's basketball pays the freight. Now, men's wrestling is self-sustaining. That's not paying the freight for other programs. But like when the Iowa women's team goes on a road trip to a tournament in L.A. or Hawaii or wherever they go, when they go there and they stay in a first, fly first class and stay in a hotel, they're not generating that. That's coming because of the men's football and basketball programs. That's not happening because everybody's there to see the Iowa women play. And the other sponsor is Chris Murphy from Connecticut. The other thing that I've talked about. Look, they're saying big-time college athletics looks no different than professional leagues. Not true. And they're saying it's time for us to stop denying the right of college athletes to make money off their talents. Look, name, image, and likeness isn't necessarily a bad thing. Steve Dace talked about it on the show a year and a half ago. Let that happen. There's already money changing hands in college sports. Why are we pretending that it's not? Why not let athletes make name, image, and likeness money and let the IRS enforce the taxability of it? Now, I see bad things on the horizon when they say things like let them hire agents and let it be unlimited. And, they talk about equity and equality in these articles. They say it's not fair. It's exploitation. You know what? When it comes to name, image, and likeness, how many people are going to head down to Dave's Auto Mart and get the autograph of the catcher on the women's softball team? How many? I'm curious. How many? None. They said, look, they go on to say this. Murphy says this. If predominantly white coaches and NCAA executives can have unfettered endorsement deals, why shouldn't predominantly black athletes be afforded the same opportunity? The new bill also specifically prohibits the NCAA or conferences from doing anything that would prevent athletes from organizing under collective representation to sell their licensing rights as a group. I'm telling you, if that happens, college sports is dead. I mean, these are student athletes, student athletes. Now, I get it. Felicia Goodson was on our show last summer. She said, in discussing and asking, it's full-time for these kids. Football's full-time, and it's year-round. And there's no off-season for these kids anymore, at least in the football program. I get that. But still a free education, this is a body that we can't, we're giving control to Congress. This is a body that by and large can't do what we elect it and pay it to do already. Let's just be honest. Most of them aren't there to serve their constituents anyway. They're in D.C. to serve themselves. Remember this, pretty much anything Congress or state legislatures do is about getting access to what they perceive to be a cash cow. They aren't protecting the interests of the athletes. They're especially not protecting the interest or enjoyment of the fans. But also remember this, we the people, and thus we the fans, we're allowing this. We're allowing it to happen. If we actually do care about our schools and our athletes and our teams, Maybe it's time we step up our game by letting these government types know that we really don't need them or want them in our sports. They've got jobs already. The jobs are outlined in our state and federal constitutions and in our state and federal laws. Let's tell them they need to worry about the jobs that we elect them to do and that they are paid to do. Rather than them worrying about people who are already getting a free education and a lifetime of opportunity through relationships that they could build. They don't need to worry about whether white coaches are overpaid. This makes me want to hurl. Let's talk more Super Bowl, or rather, let's talk about the politicization and virtue signaling that has ensued. Now, first of all, we can put to rest the Tom Brady benefits from Bill Belichick and the system. We can put that crap aside. He showed us basically it isn't all about best talent. It's about best player. Patrick Mahomes is loaded with talent. He's a great player. But Brady basically continues to show us that there is so much more to the game than a system or an abundance of physical talent or even mere brains. Look, this guy knows how and when to attack a defense. He knows what weaknesses to look for. But more important, perhaps, he knows when a risk is worth taking. I mean, you know, the difference between Tom Brady and Brett Favre isn't their ownership, isn't their surrounding cast. Brett Favre made a lot of stupid mistakes in his playing career. He really did. He was a great player, but he didn't have the handle on the game that Tom Brady has. Why wasn't a Cam Newton all world? Why didn't Vince Young tear it up? Why isn't Deshaun Watson tearing up? Why I don't think Trevor Lawrence will tear it up. Trevor Lawrence has all the tools, but I don't think he has the overall field presence and knowledge that Brady does. Now, look, we know that Tom Brady, what he did in New England, wasn't just about Belichick or better surrounding talent. That said, the Bucs have a lot of talent. Their staff and their front office knew that they had to go out and get some elite players, not just Brady. The post-Super Bowl virtue signaling is off the charts, of course. Female assistants being the first. Telling us how creditable Tampa's black coordinators did, how hard Roger Goodell is trying to achieve diversity, and, of course, how white the ownership is of the NFL. Look, a couple comments on that. First, we've already had black coaches win Super Bowls. If you'll remember 13 years ago, we saw a Super Bowl with opposing black head coaches. But what did we hear all week leading up to the game? All we heard about was what a raw deal Chiefs offensive coordinator Eric Bieniemy has gotten in not getting an NFL head coaching gig. Now, okay, it's not about Bieniemy now, it's about Tampa Bay's coordinators. Of course, we're hearing about female assistants. In other words, it really doesn't matter who the coach, the GM, the quarterback, the offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, it doesn't really matter anything else because Big Left and its army of virtue signals, to them it's about lodging complaint after complaint. It's never enough. Frankly, Big Left, when I called it that, probably doesn't even cover the huge umbrella I placed over it. Officially, Big Left is what I call it. Could be called Big Complaint, Big Virtue, Big Woke, doesn't matter. I mean, I'm going to stick with Big Left, but seriously, these people, they can't come out of it and just say, you know, that was a good game and it was a surprise, tough break for Pat Mahomes, not getting a second in a row. They couldn't do that. They had to tell us about black assistant coaches and female assistant coaches and how black head coaches haven't gotten jobs, et cetera, et cetera. You know, as bad as it is when they say a team has to interview X number of minority coaches, it's also telling certain minorities that you have to want to be a coach. We need you to be a coach. What if a guy doesn't want to be? There's an assistant coach at the University of Iowa named Phil Parker. Everybody keeps talking about Phil's got to be a head coach somewhere. He has said several times he doesn't want that. He doesn't want that gig. He does well as an assistant coach, as the defensive coordinator in Iowa. I would hope he would be considered when Kirk Ferentz is done. By all accounts and all history, Phil Parker has said he doesn't want to be a head coach. Some guys just don't want to be head coaches. Now, if Eric Bieniemy wants to be head coach, great, give him a chance. But don't do it just because he's black. and just to fill a quota. Do it because that's what Eric Bieniemy really wants to do, and Eric Bieniemy knows he can do the job. The ads, I didn't really watch them. I just don't anymore. Sometimes I do if I'm with a group of people. I didn't last Sunday. The halftime show, I haven't watched that in several years. Why? Like I said, because it sucks. It usually does. Why? Because like a lot of high-level sports, their pregame, their halftime, and their postgame shows have become stale. The last good show I saw, UCF Homecoming, about 20 years ago, Johnny Lang was the postgame player for their homecoming. Back then when Johnny Lang was still an up-and-comer, he had just released the song Lie to Me. He didn't need a camera to reassure himself that he was good. Viewership, Indy Hawk KBS about that, or actually T. Bodie. Well, considering smaller fan attendance, not to mention absurd ticket prices, you would think it would be high. Well, not quite. The TV audience was about 92 million. They had a record streaming audience, which brings the total to about 96.4 million. That's a lot, right? Nope. It is the smallest viewing audience since 2006. Last year's game between Kansas City and the San Francisco 49ers was 101.3 million. The record is for the Patriots-Seahawks game after the 2014 season of 114.5 million. The game is most years, is TV's most watched event. According to CBS, it was the most live streamed in the event's history. Up 65% over last year, it's the first to deliver over a billion total streaming minutes. Now, the excuse, and frankly, they're getting pretty good with the excuses. The excuse is that the game wasn't close after the first half, and COVID cut down on Super Bowl watch parties. Other excuses included Tampa and Kansas City being small market teams, although ironically, the second highest viewership behind Kansas City was Boston. Kansas City actually had more viewers this year than last year. Notice what they're not suggesting, or rather two things that they're not suggesting. First, there's no mention of the fact that CBS interviewed AP Biden. They are definitely afraid of facing the fact people might have turned away when that came on and just never came back to it. They're absolutely terrified to think that people would refuse to tune in to see woke social justice warriors dancing and singing at halftime. Or woke social justice warriors kneeling. Or the network's own social justice warriors virtue signaling and fighting to see who's the most woke. Believe it or not, football fans just want to see football. We never guessed that. Oh, and since we saw him in a Jeep ad during the game, we now know, we've learned that Bruce Springsteen was arrested last November at Gateway National Recreation Area in Sandy Hook, New Jersey, for DWI, reckless driving, and consuming alcohol in a closed area. He was, according to a quote from National Park Service spokesperson, cooperative throughout the process. There's no comment from his camp, and my guess is that it will be all sealed, so us peons don't see that he probably got special treatment, i.e. the kind of treatment none of us would ever get. Seems the Dallas Mavericks, at the direction of owner Mark Cuban, had stopped playing the national anthem before games. Now, before everyone goes off, I actually think Mark Cuban gets this one right. I don't think he knows why he gets it right. I've said before that kneeling during the anthem, though it's nothing more than a virtue signaling display, I think it's wrong. But I also think playing the national anthem I think it's stopped being about patriotism, or at best, too many people are not respectful during the playing and or singing of it. So then, in my opinion, taking the time to do it is partially pointless. For those that want to kneel or observe a moment of silence or pray or whatever, or go get another beer or load up on crappy processed $8 nachos before the game, you got an extra 2 to 3 minutes to do that now if you're in the stadium. Have at it. For those of you that wanted that time to virtue signal, sorry, whatever. For those that wanted to observe it and sing it, okay, that's time that's not spent on the game, so I'm not upset in that regard. For those who disrespected the anthem anyway, you know, the ones that keep their hats on or point to their shirtless, fat-ass bodies with their team's logo painted on it, chugging $12 Bud Light, or for those that are trying to juggle their beer and their nachos and their overpriced program, you got a little bit extra time now. You can take extra time and get everything settled. Now, Cuban has said today that they will honor the NBA's rule and they will start playing again. But see, here's what Mark Cuban doesn't even get, probably. You know, this guy is one of your SJWs. He's always touting the, you know, oh, kneeling is, you know. He didn't even get that he was stopping the kneelers from having an audience or a chance in the limelight. He probably didn't get that. I can't believe it. I can't believe I'm the only one that thought that. That, hey, guess what? He doesn't realize he's stopping the social justice warriors too. But all in all, you know, watch the national anthem on TV during a game. Or if you're in the game, look around you and see how many people aren't paying it any reverence. So why do we keep doing it? Yes, we could, you know, we could treat people like kids and had to stand for the Pledge of Allegiance in school. But what does that accomplish? To tell people to shut up and whatnot. So no, I mean, I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. Mark Cuban doesn't understand why necessarily a bad thing. Let's get back on Todd McNair for a second. There's a couple elements of that story that ooze judicial hypocrisy and point out just how corrupt our judiciary has gotten. Look, we always put the judiciary on a pedestal. We usually view it as a last hope or a last semblance of reason or normalcy. But just think about some of the decisions we have seen handed down by our courts the last two decades or so. Think about what we heard in several of the election lawsuits. Remember this phrase? It wasn't enough to change the results. Then read this case. Read what the appeals court said. Just one juror would have made a difference? Really? In a civil case? What the hell? Yet hundreds of affidavits, hours of video evidence, testimony from numerous and diverse sources about the voting machines, quote, wasn't enough to change the results. That is utter hypocrisy. The courts will say this wasn't enough to change the result. When we talk about fraud, we don't talk about degrees of fraud. We don't talk about just the number of votes. That's just the starting point to start in motion the notion that a fraud took place in an election. It's not the burden of one bringing a suit to walk in and say, we've got this many votes. We've counted them already. That's not their purview. In fact, they would be probably barred from doing that, as many Republican poll watchers were barred from trying to observe. No, it's the court's job at that point to step in and say, all right, we need a review or we need an audit or whatever. But so many of them turned that down. And yet here they're saying one juror on this thing would have made the difference. Not might have, not there's a chance. It said would have made the difference. That's a big leap. That changing out a juror would have made a different verdict. And that leads me to my last rant. The article from Time Magazine. It's titled The Secret History of the Shadow Campaign That Saved the 2020 Election. It appeared on Time.com's website on February 4th. And while they use terms like bipartisan and fairness, make no mistake, this was a concerted effort by Big Left to rig and or steal the election. The article all but admits things that took place like changing laws on the fly, ramping up protest efforts. They literally were ramping up protest efforts in advance, securing, quote, public and private funding, including from overseas. They actually say that. It also details behind-the-scenes agreements between big business and big labor to ensure that any Trump objections would be muted, hindered, sabotaged, and ignored. It involved former Obama official Norm Eisen and his efforts to recruit disgruntled Republicans to the effort. Lastly, the article all but says Trump recruited and incited the January 6th incursion at the Capitol. The problem with that is by laying out the supposition that Trump would recruit people to take part in the event, they all but telegraphed their intent. What the article does really is attempt to backdate certain events in order to justify the rigging of an election. The author gets pretty bold. They use the word fortify in place of the word rig. To be sure, though, this election was rigged. Just as the Pennsylvania Democrat who said Trump would be leading election night only to have mail-in and other ballots. He didn't say just said mail-in and other ballots put Biden over the top, AP Biden over the top. That opened the door to ballot and machine manipulation. So, too, does this article seek to justify events and give possible plausible deniability after the fact? Go to Time.com and find the article. It's mind-blowing. Despite the fact, now we are actually hearing confirmation that the January 6th incursion was a pre-planned attack. Numerous, like as in hundreds of people had been arrested. It was known about, by the way, we know that it was known about, if not coordinated by Democrats who talked about knowing that something was going to happen. Pelosi, via the House Sergeant at Arms, not asking for increase, in fact, refusing increase the security. In spite of all that, the impeachment continues on. Now, they're bringing stuff in now into this impeachment already that's not germane to what the, to their articles of impeachment that they sent. This article is just another bit of testimony in the court of public opinion. That's all it is. So what do you do? Okay, first, if you've got a membership with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, that's who coordinated with the AFL-CIO. If you've got a membership with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, cancel it. Like now. It's been an anti-small business organization for a number of years anyway. But the fact they coordinated with big labor to stack the deck in this election cycle tells us they are also pro-organized labor. No organization that is pro-business does that, let alone pro-small business. Second, start shopping small. Small businesses, local business. Look, the easiest place to start is restaurants, bars, believe it or not, hardware. Look, while Home Depot and Lowe's are just these gargantuan home improvement stores, there are tons of local hardware stores. And not only that, Ace Hardware, True Value Hardware, Do It Best Hardware, those are all national franchises. They are not national corporate-owned chain stores. So when you go into an Ace Hardware, yes, it's called Ace, but it's a franchise. So it's probably a local person that owns or runs it. Restaurants is easy, of course. We pretty much know which ones are corporate, which ones are not. Bars are even easier. With the advent of brew pubs and the revitalization of a lot of downtown areas, craft beer and craft cocktails are more often found at independent bars versus corporate chain establishment. Anyway, and for God's sake, if you're getting all your barbecue at chains, just stop going out to eat. Just stop. Same with pizza. Hell, buy frozen pizza before you ever order from Domino's or Papa John's or Little Caesars or any of those other chains that put glorified store-bought tomato sauce on their pie and call it secret ingredients. They say secret ingredients in our sauce. Oh, crap. Third, why you still have to buy some stuff at big businesses, big box stores. Let management know that you're going to try and migrate some of or much of your business away from there. Tell them why. Tell them you believe in small business. Tell them you believe in community. Tell them it's nothing personal. You just can't support big box stores whose management and leadership are not supportive of small businesses, but rather they seek to dominate them. That's it. Here's an excerpt from the Time article that says it all. It says, a well-funded cabal of powerful people ranging across industries and ideologies, working together behind the scenes to influence perceptions, change rules and laws, steer media coverage, and control the flow of information. They were not rigging the election. They were fortifying it. What do you say to that? How do you even read something like that and not think, what in the hell? Okay, enough about all that stuff. Here's a laughy from today. Here's one of today's laughies. One of the House impeachment managers, Maryland Democrat Jamie Raskin, he made a comment yesterday that there would be no blabbering, no lengthy speeches, and that he remembers that the definition of the word professor is a person who talks while everyone is sleeping. He further made the point that this was about President Trump's attempt to block the certification of the election on January 6th. So far, nothing laughy about that. Here's the laughy. In his first official act as a congressman in January 2017, Jamie Raskin led an effort with other House Democrats to block the certification of Donald J. Trump of the as 45th president of the United States. You can't make that up. You can't. Today's second laughing is a tweet from Pocahontas Warren. Yes, Elizabeth Pocahontas Warren said on her tweet, "When I was a kid, a minimum wage job would support a family of three. Today, it won't keep a mother and her baby out of poverty. We need to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour." Now, at the approximate time Senator Warren could start working, the minimum wage was $1.25 an hour. When she was 21, it was $1.60. When she was 30, it was $2.90 an hour. When she was, quote, a kid, it ranged from $1 to $1.25. Here's a newsflash. None of those figures at 40 hours a week was ever enough to sustain a family of three. Do you know why? Because it was never designed to sustain a family of three. But she tweeted it. That's today's second laughy. I mean, you do have to laugh at it when you read at it. Okay, here's today's bitch session. Three of this year's nominees for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame are Chaka Khan, Carole King, and Tina Turner. Now, would somebody please explain to me how these three are not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, while the following are in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame: ABBA, the Beastie Boys, Bon Jovi, Cheap Trick, The Cure, Def Leppard, Depeche Mode, Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five, Green Day, and Guns N' Roses, to name just 10 that are in. Look, to be fair, both Carole King and Tina Turner are in as part of duos. Carole King's in with her former songwriter slash ex-husband, Jerry Goffin, as a songwriting duo. Tina Turner is in with her husband, her ex-husband, Ike. Remember Ike? I got smack up on my bitch. Ike Turner, they're in as a duo. Still, I mean, how does the Hall of Fame pull off Green Day or Guns N' Roses or the Beastie Boys, but Chaka Khan is still waiting? That is frigging absurd. Absurd. How are those? Now, again, noted, two of them are in, but not on their own merits, not as individuals. Just mind-boggling. It truly is. Remember, the 11 members who voted to strip the committee assignment from their own party member, Marjorie Taylor Greene. They are Young Kim of California, Mario Diaz Ballart, Carlos Jimenez, and Maria Alvira Salazar of Florida, Adam Kinzinger of Illinois, Fred Upton of Michigan, Chris Smith of New Jersey, Chris Jacobs, John Katko, and Nicole Maliotakis of New York, and Brian Fitzpatrick of Pennsylvania. And remember, there are 10 Republican House members that voted for impeachment. They are David Valadao of California, Adam Kinzinger of Illinois, Peter Meyer and Fred Upton of Michigan, John Katko of New York, Anthony Gonzalez of Ohio, Tom Rice, South Carolina, Jamie Herrera Butler and Dan Newhouse of Washington, and the Dr. Zayas of the group, Liz Cheney of Wyoming. Remember, those people that voted against what you voted for. Remember, people of Georgia, that there's 11 people that voted to strip your district, one of your districts, of representation at committee level. Remember, people in California, Illinois, Michigan, New York, Ohio, South Carolina, Washington, and Wyoming. Remember, Republicans in those states, there are 10 people that voted against what you voted, that voted to impeach a president on a bogus charge. Remember that. Don't forget. Those people need to be primaried come 2022. T. Bodie says Tina is in. Carol King is not. Carol King is in with Jerry Goffin as a duo. Tina Turner is in with Ike Turner. They are not in as individuals. What has Chaka Khan done? Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? What has Chaka Khan done? My God. Prince only dedicated a whole concert to her music one time. Literally. A whole acoustic concert to Chaka Khan's music, playing it on his acoustic guitar. Fact. That's what Chaka Khan has done. Yeah. Okay, 7:30 Eastern Time. Hawkeyes taking on Rutgers for our Hawkeye fans out there. There's other games besides. I'm not watching the impeachment stuff. I'm just going to flat out tell you. I don't see the point. On the procedural votes that they've had, they're not going to convict. In spite of whatever they put in, that's not germane to the articles themselves. So there's that. Again, next week we'll be back, 5:30. You can always call every week, 319-527-6706. If you want to email me, send me an email, hjpsports1980@gmail.com. That's HJP, as in Hank Jones, Polly. sports1980@gmail.com. I'm on Twitter, @hpolysports. T-Bodie, come on. I'm on Twitter, @hpolysports. I'm on Facebook. Just look for Hank Jones Polysports. But again, every week we are here, so listen up. And looking to get some guests in the next couple weeks and months, in contact with some people that might be able to provide some really good guests on the show. Interesting. Kind of diverse, not all from politics, not all from sports, but want to kind of mix it up, you know, what the heck. So I'll put that out, and I'll put that out in advance when I know. So folks, have a good week. It's a long time before we get football again. We got the draft coming up, but football proper doesn't start again until basically August. So that kind of for us football fans. But we got basketball for Hawkeye fans. We got the Franuary Fade to look forward to, see if we can back our way into the tournament. Hawkeye wrestling, of course, is still steamrolling along. Hey, the Golden Globe nominations are out. Who cares? Oscar nominations should be out soon. Again, who cares? Who even wants to go to a movie theater anymore? But such as it is, that's what we got. Got the vaccine going. You're doing it. Oh, my gosh. T. Bodie just said Hawk Wrestling's on COVID lockdown. Ugh. Is there no sacred anything anymore? Anyway, if you're getting the vaccine, good luck. If you're not, power to you. Stay safe, though. I'm not saying wear two masks like others. I'm not saying wear three masks, but don't be stupid. Wash your hands. Brush your teeth. Keep yourself clean. Don't go into huge gatherings with 5 square feet around you, all that good stuff. But be safe. Have a good week. Have a good weekend. It's Valentine's Day this weekend, fellas. Be mindful of that. And we will be back next week at 5:30. Working on one guest right now that someone put me in touch with. So hopefully that if that pans out for next week, bravo. If it doesn't, we'll try and get them for another time. Meanwhile, have a great weekend. Have a good rest of the week. Have a good Monday and Tuesday of next week. And then we'll see you back here next Wednesday. Again, though, remember, just because someone's got an R in front of their name doesn't mean they're conservative, doesn't mean that they're looking out for your best interests. Only you can do that. Don't let them take away your voting rights. Don't let them take away your guns. They've already tried to take away all your money. So anyway, have a great one, folks. Be safe. Going to send you off with something a little different this week, only because this is the new theme in Congress right now. Here we go. Come back.
nobody's clown. I'm treating you cool. I'm putting you down. But baby, I don't intend to leave empty-handed.
Yes, Spinal Tap. I yelled go Biden go because in the actual song he says go Nigel go. Nigel plays that guitar solo, but I say go Biden go because he's grabbing all the money. Folks, have a good week. If you have never seen that movie, by the way, this is Spinal Tap. Please watch it. They are currently residing in the Where Are They Now file, though. Have a good one, folks. Good night. God bless. Be safe. Go Hawks. Out.